We have to learn how to cope with situation rather than to remember it. Instead of feeling that we are informed because we can quote somebody else, our informedness must be proven by the fact that we can adjust to the unknown of tomorrow. The essential purpose of education is to create a person who can safely live tomorrow. It is not enough to equip him with any group of dogma upon which he must depend for knowing. It is assumed, of course, that tomorrow is merely the extension of today. This was once true. Now, however, tomorrow may be the complete contradiction of today. There are several ways in which this can be possible. One thing, for example, is that with this high development that we have in nuclear physics, today we have an uneasy peace. Tomorrow we might have a war of extermination. The individual who is educated must not only be educated to get along in the uneasy peace that he now experiences. He must be equipped to meet the challenge of a complete catastrophe if it should occur. We have already found that a great industry, like the motion picture industry, has grown, reached a tremendous sphere of influence, has declined, and now virtually died within the generation in which we live. Individuals pass through its entire career carrying with them a tremendous institution in its rise and fall in 50 years. The individual who trained for that type of life is already unemployable. No matter what we work with, we work in a complete period of transition. And to meet this period of transition, we have to have a different kind of education. And the point that is most important of all seems to be that this different kind of better education could be conferred more rapidly than we are now doing it. Looking forward, sociologically speaking, into the next 25 years of our way of life, we cannot hope to estimate the changes that will occur, but we can, to a measure, suggest the probable directions of some of these changes. We know that beyond any question of doubt, many of our most cherished and considered staple institutions will be gone. We know also that most or many of our methods of doing things will be obsolete. That somewhere along the line, this whole situation will change. We know, for example, what electronics has done in the field of human endeavor in a comparatively few years. A few years ago, there were no careers in the field of electronics. Today, it is one of the most promising fields. What its future is, however, again rests upon tomorrow, upon the next discovery of the human mind. This procedure goes on and on and on. And to meet it and to face it is a tremendous challenge upon the life of the individual. So lots of young people coming up now, looking around the problem, have decided their own way about this. They feel that what we call living today is just a continuous process of going to school from the cradle to the grave, but that after you graduate formally, you are paid to go to school, whereas previously you had to pay to go to school. Before you graduate, you have to pay. After graduating, you are paid moderately for the continuance and improvement of your own knowledge. Now, as in the cases of some of these more pressureful fields, I have talked to men, for example, in learned professions, and they have told me, they say, to keep up in a reasonable way with the present trends and changes in our fields, to enable ourselves to say, honorably and factually that we are up to the minute in our own specialization would require approximately 200 hours a day of work for the rest of our lives. It would take that length of time to read the new literature on the subject, more than that length of time to try to understand it. The individual, then, most modestly speaking, finds a career, as far as profession and trade are concerned, is becoming an ever more consuming force in his life. In order to maintain himself in one of the higher brackets of society in which he lives, in order to regard himself as an executive, a leader, or a technically educated person, he must practically devote his life to the continual amassing of knowledge. If he does not do this, he will be outraced in a short time, and he may be replaced by another person much younger and less intelligently informed than himself, but possessing the immediate answers to some new situation that has arisen. This means that what we call education, progress, development, these things not only become essentially the foundation of our economic survival, but they gradually encroach upon every other area of our lives. And in the end, the problem of trying to know will very largely eclipse the experience of living itself, so that we will no longer live as persons, to experience as persons the unfoldment of our own characters. We will live merely to become continually contemporary with the advancement of knowledge. Into this general shambles will disappear the American home, the American concept of family, friendship, leisure, and all the quiet ways of self-expression and self-improvement that we know. A really well-trained and up-and-coming young scientist cannot have much time for recreation. He cannot do much with music or art. He has very few evenings with his family. His children hardly know him. Yet he must do this or he will be unemployable in 5 years. Something has to be done about it because it's gradually destroying the very ends for which it was intended. The purpose of education was to liberate man, liberate him from the unknown. Actually, the present process of education is enslaving man. In trying to liberate him from what he did not know, we have put him into slavery to what he does know. We have not achieved our end. We have not achieved leisure. I remember only maybe 15 or 20 years ago, we had a political movement in this country that talked about the possibility of replacing men with machines so that within 10 or 15 or 20 years, according to their thinking, we would all have a perpetual holiday on full pay. It didn't materialize, and it never will. It has the utopian element in it. But even if it were to materialize, even if man suddenly found that he had developed instruments and means by means of which he would no longer need to work and would be able to sustain himself on a high status level from this time on through the rest of his life, it would still now take man 500 years to learn what to do with his own leisure. He has lost the whole theory. He has lost the end toward which labor was directed, namely security. The purpose of work was that the individual should attain a certain security and have certain leisure and protection and ability and means to accomplish the things that he wanted to do. He can no longer even dream of the things he wants to do. The cost of achieving continuing survival is at the present time too high to permit much luxury thinking outside of itself. This means that religion and philosophy are largely and heavily neglected, and therefore that education itself is suffering correspondingly. Education is now absolutely unable to cope with the problem of the moral development of young people. It is unable to cope with the dissatisfaction within the body of the young scholastic group. It is unable to cope with juvenile crime within the very sacred sanctuaries of education or in early life outside of education. So somehow something has gotten completely lost. And to regain it or find out what it is going to be one of the duties of the educator of tomorrow. One thing we know he's going to have to do to make possible the advancement of our way of life, he's going to have to cut down the time problem in education. This to him seems impossible. Today we are assured that we need more scientists, one of the long, slow subjects which take many years to master. We need more mathematicians, we need more physicists, more biologists, more chemists, more experts in various fields, which means that we need more 18 to 22 or 24 year school men. Which means that we are going to graduate these men in their late 20s or early 30s before they're able to make a living. This tremendous investment cut out of the life of the human being is not justified by the result. This individual is not able to prove that this immense amount of schooling is producing in him a maximum achievement. It is producing an individual who is worn out, tired out, and disillusioned before he graduates. And it is also in these long, long years of intellectual struggle with subjects for which he may or may not be even adapted. It is in this period that his dissatisfactions, his rebellions, and his intensities arise, and the result is that most of our institutions of learning are having communistic difficulties on their own campuses. Also, it means that the establishment of the home, the creation of the family, proper years for marriage, these things are all cast aside in this tremendous problem of trying to be educated. And according to materialism, which is still rampant in these institutions, there seems to be no particularly good reason for all this, for the fact that in the ultimate state of things, there seems to be no difference in between educated and uneducated dust. Once we have returned to the good earth, it seems to make very little difference whether we were Phi Beta Kappas or not. So the entire problem from a materialistic standpoint is absolute vanity. But we are pushed on by the tremendous intensities of our worldly so-called processes and progresses. The solution lies in the problem, in a way, of not more than 10 years of necessary schooling. The individual can know all that we really know in 10 years. And in many cases, he can find out much sooner. Because after he graduates and goes into the learned professions, if he's an honest man, for every 10 questions that are asked him after he has had the 20 years of work, for every 10 questions that are asked him, he will have to admit that in 8 of them, he does not know the answer. And there's no prospect of his finding out. Consequently, he has tremendous weight of dead material that is not contributing to knowledge in any reasonable way whatsoever. All of this problem builds up around our concept of what constitutes civilization and what constitutes progress. It is awfully difficult, in fact impossible, to tell people that there's anything wrong with a system which is in a problem of the constant adventure of discovering. It's hard to tell an individual that all this tremendous amount of work that is being done in all the areas of advanced sciences, that all this is not progress. It's hard to tell him that. It's hard to convince him, for example, of something that I wrote about back in 1924, when I did an article on the mystery of the toothbrush. This was a very important educational work, but it seems never to have made much of an impression upon Harvard. But at the same time, I feel it was a very important thing. And that is that somewhere is the unsung, perhaps unknown, unhonored, and forgotten hero who invented a toothbrush. Now, by means of a toothbrush, it is perfectly possible for the individual to preserve his teeth a little longer, especially if he uses the right toothbrush, the right motion, and the right dentifrice. All these are very important, and like every other field of human endeavor, these change every 5 minutes. And there is no one more miserable than the individual who is using yesterday's dentifrice. He probably won't have a friend left alive. In this situation, however, man has for thousands of years struggled through the darkness of ignorance, superstition, and error before he was able to produce a toothbrush. But during the period in which he was struggling through these tremendous struggles of the ages, something has been overlooked. He didn't need the toothbrush. It was not until man became a more and more refined creature. It was not until he lived more and more stupidly. It was not until he lost all common sense in dietetics and nutrition that he needed a toothbrush. But gradually, he broke every law of health until teeth practically fell out of his mouth of their own accord and threatened not to last to middle life. He found that all the ways that he was living were giving him dental problems that self-respecting camels, horses, elephants, dogs, and miscellaneous chimpanzees never suffered from. But having broken all laws and come to almost the state where he was toothless by the time he graduated from college, he has met the situation, he has solved the riddle of the ages, he has redeemed the faith of his contemporaries and bestowed a great blessing upon the future by giving them the toothbrush. He has not corrected the reason for the tooth falling out. He has not found out what causes cavities. He has not learned to take care of the teeth he had, but he has a toothbrush, and all is well. Now, this to a large measure is progress. Progress is the individual finding solutions for problems that should never have existed and which never would have existed had he not been stupid in the first place and continued to cultivate it down through history to the present time. So a great deal of progress, as we know it, is simply the individual trying to rescue himself from his own mistakes, to try to find some way of patching up his own superb ignorance in all the essential values of life. Progress, for instance, today is an attempt to balance military power to prevent the Russians from attacking us before the Chinese can attack both of us. Progress is therefore to preserve this delicate balance of power which should never have existed or been needed in the first place, and not the whole world united in one magnificent exhibition of adolescent selfishness. Progress is not all man moving gloriously forward. Progress is man trying to pick himself up after falling over himself thousands of times. If we could straighten out some of the essential principles of life, this whole struggle for what we call progress would lead to a moderate way of life toward essential purposes that are valuable. And we would end up far better off than we will be by the present procedure, and with a little energy left to enjoy our well-earned benefits when they arrive. Education has not educated itself on the principles of what are necessary for the survival of mankind. A very large part of our tremendous competitiveness is simply due to the competitiveness of others. All this competition is not leading to progress. It is leading to a ruthless warfare over profit that will ultimately submerge us and probably end drive us into a socialized existence. After which time, many people will be bitterly unhappy, but they have never done anything to prevent it and would never stop their own selfishness long enough to cooperate with any cause that was trying to prevent it. Progress is not just this headlong dash that we are trying to incorporate into the concept at the present time. Progress has nothing to do with who gets to the moon first. Progress has nothing to do with two or three poor astronauts wandering out in space hoping they'll get back. These things are exciting, they're interesting, they're remarkable, but as the old Frenchman used to say, what have they to do with the price of eggs? And the answer is very little. It is interesting. They're luxuries we might enjoy. And if in the name of real progress we wanted to do these things, we could do them graciously and pleasantly and have a lot of fun with them and ensure as much safety as possible before these experiments are made, and instead of throwing countries into bankruptcy in a wild dash for these ends, they would gradually and naturally develop in a peaceful society if we wanted them. But under our present situation, progress is only a kind of struggle for survival against the tremendous pressure of knowledge. Knowledge is frightening us to death, wearing us out, and destroying the essential end for which it was intended. So we have to think a little bit about what might be done about it. What do we need to learn today? The average person has lessons which, if he could learn them, or could pass on this learning to his own children, or the schools could pass it on to the nation, would in 20 or 25 years probably have a marked effect upon the morale of our people and might very well make the whole world a little better place to live in. First thing of all, every child is entitled to know what is the great good toward which all this struggle leads. What is this accomplishment? What are we doing, and why are we doing it? And questions like that today are completely taboo. We probably would have very much less difficulty with young people if we could answer the question very simply, what is the plan behind the present effort of mankind to grow? Why are we growing? And why do we think that what we are doing is growing? And how can we prove it? And if we continue growing as we're growing now, will we survive another 100 years? These are questions that need answers. And to find answers for these questions will be to integrate the human potential, the tremendous mass of human wealth and means, energy, power, towards some useful goal. I think every child entering school, along with the salute to the flag, should have a clear concept of why it is important for him to do what he is going to learn to do, and how this accomplishment will inevitably contribute to the collective security of his creation. In other words, I think that young person should know before he starts to learn that if he succeeds and becomes an outstanding person, that he is going to be a benevolent force in the way of life, and that he is not, under any conditions, going to succeed at the expense of another or advance his own cause by preventing the normal advancement of other people. Nor will he regard himself as successful merely because he has more than other people have. Nor will he think in legislating, in living, in working, primarily of profit, but that he will think of the great plan and reason for the existence of his country, his nation, and himself. What is his prospect? What is he doing? Why is he doing it? When he goes into a course in medicine, has he already learned that medicine is a public service which is going to give him a useful living and a useful reason for existence? But that the exploitation of this, the false use of his knowledge for the unreasonable advancement of himself at the expense of his patients, is as serious a crime against society as murder. Does he know this? If he does not know this before he gets out of the third grade, he is not educated. I don't care what else he knows. If he does not know these things, he will become in his due time the parent of wars, the parent of more corruptions of peoples, of more disasters, of more prison camps and marches toward Bataan. He will continue to preserve the intolerances and intemperances which burden us. This young person must not be told that this is a noble career. It must be proved to him. He must see it. He must touch it with his own consciousness. He must look around him and see that this career that he is in is being served by honorable persons above corruption. If he does not see this, then there is no particular reason why he should regard education as adequate, simply because it perpetuates the way his ancestors made their mistakes. There is no reason why a future generation should be instructed in how to live by an older generation that is committing suicide. So education has got to get at these facts. And education has got to show the individual the reason for his own existence. It's got to show him why he should go to school and learn to read and write, and make him feel so much in that direction, so deeply moved by it, that he will want all reasonable education that he can secure. It must also teach him the value of his own life, the value of his own consciousness as a person. He must learn that education is a way of unfolding his own nature, his own character, and that education is absolutely worthless to him if it helps him to make $1 million but does not help him how to become a conscious, reasonable, well-adjusted human being. That the end of education is that man shall live well. And by living well, that he shall surround himself with those things which actually enrich his life. I have known many persons through the years who have worked, struggled, sacrificed, danger in health, family, and life to accumulate vast amounts of worldly goods, and when they had it, all they could do with it was waste it. I know persons who came up from young manhood working as oil riggers, digging into the ground, heaving pipes, building scaffolding. Finally, they made it. They became very rich. And what did they do? They took their life savings, the life work they had done, and were perfectly happy to spend it merely to provide food and drink for their own cronies. These people spent thousands of dollars simply to entertain each other with no thought of any values involved. Here they worked for what they had, but their education did not help them to use what they had. They were perfectly miserable. So education has to lay foundations first. And if it lays these foundations well and honorably, all other things can be reasonably accomplished. But without these foundations, we have no education. Now, whether this process of education should be set up as a separate structure, there is difference of opinion. Perhaps man is capable of having this gradually impressed upon him by the very psychological environment in which he lives. This would be true if the environment was worth anything. If our great media of communication, the newspapers, radio, television, motion pictures, all these instruments were quietly but systematically indoctrinating the human being with the principles of a proper way of life, we probably would never have to teach it as a separate course of study. Man exposed to it, man accepting it, works with it. And if the principles we know are necessary were attractively presented, we might never have to formalize any system for their instruction at all. They would simply grow with us, just as bad habits at the present time attach themselves to our personalities. But in one way or another, we're going to have to find out that education is different from skill or technique or specialization in training. Education and training are two things completely different. A trade school trains people, but education is not primarily a trade school. But any education system which teaches the individual only a trade or a profession, and I don't care whether it's bricklaying or astronomy, I don't care whether it is business management or the most advanced physical or mathematical sciences, if the education is solely to permit the individual to have a career in those areas, then he is attending not a university, but a trade school. We think of trade schools now as largely for those who are uneducatable in other ways. Individuals of extremely limited talents or limited means available for education go to trade schools. Actually, most of our so-called education, higher education today, is only a glorified trade school. It is not an educational institution. It is not teaching man to be educated. It is merely teaching him to be skillful in a specialized area. Whether it be mental or physical skill is inconsequential at the moment. Actually, then, we've got to separate the concept of the trade school from the university. We've got to recognize that the primary function of the trade school is to teach the individual to have a career in whatever area he wants it. The principal purpose of a university is to create a thinker, a human being capable of managing his own life wisely and honorably, and achieving a rich and purposeful personal existence. These are two completely separate things,
The university has become the trade school. The trade school cannot take on the duties of the university. Therefore, the true duties of the university are not represented in modern society except by a few independent groups struggling to preserve something they know to be true. We've got to get out of the idea, which the university is carefully fostering, that the purpose of a university is to produce $25,000 a year men. Here's your way of thinking. An individual graduating from grammar school can earn $5,000 a year. An individual graduating from high school is good for from $8,000 to $12,000 a year if he's pretty smart. The individual who graduates from college is a $25,000 a year man at his best. And if he takes two postgraduate courses and gets his doctorate, he probably ought to be good for $50,000 a year with luck. Now, this is the way it is thought of today. When a young man is asked, or asks, whether he should go to college or not, the answer is, do you want to make $10,000 a year or do you want to make $20,000 a year? Nothing more to it. This is a more dangerous situation than communistic indoctrination. Because this situation is striking the individual at a time when he cannot create an understanding of his own situation. He does not understand the life of the world in which he lives. He is starting out, and he is told today that the purpose of education is one soul's complete purpose. Whether he wishes to have status as a person in the higher economic brackets or doesn't he wish. And this is fostered in industry and all forms of modern activity by a conspiracy between business and the university, in which now business has been taught parrot-like that it must select university men for all of its best jobs. This, regardless of the fact that some of these university men cannot read and write, many of them cannot spell, very few can use the mathematical tables with which a business is involved, and in that particular line of business, their football experience is likely to prove of slight value. Yet, this is the way it is done. So education today has got to approach this problem differently. Education creates a citizen. Education creates the convictions of an Abraham Lincoln, the wisdom and practical understanding of a Benjamin Franklin, the dedication and heroism of a George Washington. These things represent the achievements and enrichments of the consciousness of man. This is what education bestows. Wealth was originally taken by hitting a man over the head with a club, or by storming his city and putting his peoples to death, and then raiding the treasury. Later in our own Western Plains, it was done with a Remington or a six-shooter. Wealth is not the same thing as success. The true purpose of education is to produce this person who is a safe member of the world in which he lives. And until we get this idea over, our education is never going to save us from any major disaster in life, but rather will continue to produce the kind of people whose scientific skill is sufficient for them to advance projects that will blow themselves and everyone else to perdition. And education has never taught them why they shouldn't do it. So we say that there should be trade schools, and that these trade schools represent one level of education, how to make a living. But that these constitute a secondary level, and that an individual, before he is qualified to assume the responsibilities of profession or even trade, must first of all be educated as a person, as a human being. If this was done, we would also get rid of a tremendous amount of lagging and a tremendous amount of waste energy in our educational theory. it would be perfectly possible to get all of our young people into action in this world by the time they're 21 years old. Adequately educated to meet the problems of our time, and probably just as well off in specialized areas as they will be now anyway with another 8 or 10 years. Because they will simply be in a position to learn what is new and will not have wasted 10 years learning what is no longer important. There is no good reason why we should advance technical education beyond a certain point. Once the principles are known and grasped, then it is far better for the education to be by the old-fashioned apprenticeship system. And the individual then, going into his profession, with the principles firmly established, learns the new things as they come along, and is not delayed for 10 or 15 years in his career by things which he will never use, never know, never contact again, and were never really true in the first place. It can be streamlined, it can be reduced, and it can be definitely shown that in all these different areas of education, extraordinary economies can be achieved if they are wanted. And out of this problem could easily come a situation in which every American citizen could have a technical education as far as he wants it, that there would be no longer the waste and stress and conflict now existing, and education could begin to assume a position of moral influence, because actually, as the Greeks realized, the educated person is the only possible leader of the people. And where authority is vested in persons technically skilled and culturally ignorant, the state will ultimately collapse. Education must be geared to the perpetuation of the values of society, and not merely the continual emphasis upon an individual making his while he's here. And Comenius and several other educators after him, right on down to the present time, have come to the conclusion that it would be a very good plan if man created a world in which he always went to school. That just as surely as today he goes to the movies or huddles around the television set, his own native inquisitiveness, his properly functioning, human, vitally awake mind, interested as man naturally is in everything that is interesting, could very easily become part of a class containing the whole nation, that the whole nation would go to school together at all ages of life. That this schooling wouldn't be by the hour, or wouldn't take the man away from his job, or make him a pauper while he was learning it, but that this education would be a continuing contact with knowledge, and that he would regard it just as important to spend one evening a week for the rest of his life keeping up with the knowledge of his world, as he now does, sitting around and wasting that evening on something that produces nothing for himself or anyone else and may end in nothing but a family argument. We are bored because we do not think. For many years, the American people developed the movie habit. And there are persons who actually wrote into newspapers and said that they had been to their local motion picture house 2 evenings a week for 11 years without missing. These people were simply there because they enjoyed going to a movie and seeing their favorite actor. How much more magnificently could this concept be put to work? There is no question in the world that if it became fashionable, everyone would break their necks to do it. Because we all want to do what is being done. That's our trouble. We are doing what is being done, and we're getting more miserable every minute. But there's no reason why every community should not have a magnificent, not an adult education movement, in which it sounds as though some poor foreigner who can't speak English is trying to learn, or some individual that couldn't get through grammar school is trying to catch up. This isn't the purpose at all, but the recognition that man himself lives in an unfolding universe, that man's own thoughts keep growing all through life, that his world is moving, that the consciousness of his attainments are moving, and that it is perfectly right and proper that every human being keep abreast of them. This, in itself, would probably go far more further in perpetuating a contemporary way of life, a way of life that is vital with knowledge. By this means also, the average person would then be able to direct much of his now scattered time to the various projects and purposes which concern him in the better sense of being concerned. He would have, under a less pressureful, better enlightened, better regulated system, time for his friends, time for his family, time for art and music and beauty and culture, time to write verses of poetry in 17 syllables or in 77 if he prefers, time to grow in a love of beauty, to love art, to love fine things, and to realize that among the problems of education is civilization, that we have to be civilized people. We've separated the concept of education from life, assuming that when we graduated, we're there. We now know this is not so, and we have to keep on going to school anyway. But we have built so many errors, so many foolish attitudes around this subject. Why don't we face a simple problem? The child, when it reaches 6, 7, 8, whatever year we wish to settle, that is not important, goes to school. In school, he learns those things which are necessary for his own existence, for his cooperation as a citizen of his world, for integration with his family and community, the principles of honor and integrity, and the three R's. By the time he has finished these and a few slightly added embellishments according to the needs of the time, he is then ready for secondary education of some nature. Here he learns quickly, easily, and without the confusion that we now have, because it's been proven again and again that it can be done. It has been proven conclusively that with a little intelligent supervision by thinking people and by teachers who are interested in something more than a job, and most teachers are interested in more than a job, that what is generally taught in 4 years today could, with everybody working together, be a magnificent success in 2 years. That from this point on, the individual passes to his technical training, whatever it may be. That in this technical area, he gets his basic principles. He learns his vocabulary. He learns the principles underlying the things he wants to do. But instead of being taught all the part that is no use to him, he then, as soon as his principles are achieved, he moves into his allotted career, taking an apprenticeship relationship with knowledge and growing up with the new ideas and never having to unlearn the old ones. He then has his career set. He could easily do this and be out of school and in his life work for the time he is 20 to 21 years old with adequate background. With a proper ethical background behind him and some understanding that his own stupidity can destroy his health, break his mind, and ruin his life, he can then also go on to plan a personal life. This personal life will continue. And as a part of his responsibilities as a citizen, he has not only the duty of maintaining this personal life, but once a week, one evening a week, in every community in this country, staggered to make it possible to do so without difficulty, in a place properly and suitably arranged for that purpose, all adult citizens, although all those not at that time attending school, gather together for the purpose of being posted simply, directly, accurately, and non-directionally on the current advancement of mankind in the previous week. what is important, what is new, what has been done. The complete and accurate record of advancement in every area of life. This situation continuing keeps the person adjusted to his time, adjusted to his world. And in areas where, through suburban populations and things of that nature, where this is less difficult, less easy to accomplish, it can be done as is being done in Australia today, simply by radio or television. But there's no reason why the individual should not continue to learn as long as he lives, improve his education, remain a contemporary, well-posted individual on every subject of concern to him, and the common good of his world at the same time. Then he will not even think of graduating finally from any form of knowledge, but he will be able to control or direct or ensoul knowledge, because whatever he learns, he will interpret in terms of basic education. He has been taught what value is. Therefore, he can measure, estimate value. He can support it where he sees it, demand it where he does not find it, and reject situations in which it is absent. This way, we can gradually achieve the end that we want. Even among the best-intentioned people today, with the best thoughts and ideas, we find a tremendous amount of prejudice. For the simple reason that the average person today does not know what is being done in his world. He does not know what contemporary and immediate thinking on various problems is. He does not know who is doing the important work. He does not know what direction the progresses in art, science, literature, philosophy, all these are leading. He does not know what is being done to bring religious groups into better understanding. He does not know what is actually being accomplished to break down and correct various forms of malpractice in professions and sciences. He does not know what teachers are trying to do. He has no understanding of what the moral and ethical problems of other nations are, and how these nations are coping with them. He does not understand or value these things because he does not know them. To the degree that he does not know them, he is in a very unwise position himself. So education is not knowing these things primarily. It is the capacity to use this knowledge when he gets it. And education will then give him the incentive to set up the machinery to make sure that he gets the knowledge. And to just a very moderate degree of united effort in these areas could remake a very difficult situation and actually get us out of a fog in the field of learning that has been thick and impenetrable as Los Angeles smog for the last 2,000 years. And out of the smog we must come. Otherwise, we will continue to wander around believing that we are in a strange and terrible world. And when the smog suddenly clears for a moment, we'll find we've never left our own backyard. That this terrible world is a world of mystery, a mystery which we have not solved because we have not the necessary knowledge. That this knowledge exists, we know. That we do not have it, we also know. That we should have it, we further believe. And under the pressure of our time, we're beginning to suspect that if we don't get it, we're going to be in very bad trouble. Education has got to reconstruct itself to meet the pressures of an age of rapid progress. And that means that every thoughtful human being must be able to adjust to rapid progress without tension and without ever losing his own center of integrity. To make this adjustment, he must have education to protect that center of integrity and knowledge to keep up with the constant changing of his times. He has these two things working together. He is relatively secure, both as a person and as a member of the community in which he lives. Time's up.